You're listening to a sermon podcast for a time like this from St. Benedict's Table, a congregation of the Anglican Church of Canada located in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable and pleasing in your sight, O God, for you are our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. This story isn't really suitable for young children, and yet I was taught it as a child, in part through this pithy little song. I just want to be a sheep, ba 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 ba. First verse, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to be a hypocrite, cause they're not hip with it. I just want to be a sheep, ba 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 ba. There were more verses, each one more anti-Semitic than the last. What were all my well-meaning Sunday school teachers and camp counselors thinking? I can't be sure, but I do know that I absorbed two key lessons from this song and others like it. First, I learned that it's fun to be in the in-crowd and to feel superior over everybody else who isn't. I just want to be a sheep because anyone who is not a sheep is a loser. The ba 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 refrain might as well have been na 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 na. Second, I learned to develop this sense of terror that maybe I wasn't really a sheep. Maybe I was a hypocrite or one of the other groups we were making fun of. And so for years, I prayed every single night that Jesus would forgive me and make me a sheep. I can't remember, but it's possible that my fear also led me to sing the songs at church even louder to make sure everyone saw my well-used Bible secured in its zippered pouch and to enact every other performative sign of belonging that I knew. I just wanted to be a sheep, and if I couldn't be completely sure I was one, I sure could act like the sheepiest sheep to ever sheep. It was this dangerous mix of moral superiority and fear. It was not good news, but binaries rarely are. The second you hear that there are two groups of people, one that will be rewarded and one punished, you want to make sure you do everything you can to make sure that you're in the right group. And oftentimes, we do this by distancing ourselves from anyone we're afraid might be in the wrong group. And we teach our kids to do the same thing. I think Jesus understood this impulse. I think Jesus was well aware of our capacity to misapply this story, and so he included several large clues to help us avoid doing just that. First, he makes it clear that we're not the ones who get to decide who's a sheep and who's a goat. That is not our job. It's Jesus's job. So we should all just stop trying to put Jesus out of a job when it comes to judging people. Second, Jesus made it clear what our job is. It's right there in the story. Our job is to provide food for people who are hungry, clothing for people who are naked, to care for the sick, and to visit people who are in prison. That's our job. And I will talk to you more about our job tonight. But first, my colleague Scott Sharman had something interesting to say about sheep and goats this week that I wanted to share with you. Here's a long quote from Scott. Goats largely get a pretty bad rap in some places in the Bible. In the Hebrew scriptures, for example, they often represent sins, even being symbolically driven out from the people to cast away evil. The well-known vision in Matthew's chapter 25 about the great end-time separation of the sheep from the goats is another such passage. Sheep receive praise and goats get judgment from this eschatological herder king. The meaning of that gospel text changed for me, for Scott, immensely when I stopped reading it as one, as a who is or who isn't kind of a text. In my view, the line between the sheep and the goats is far less a line that runs between me and another person, and far more a line that runs down the center of every human heart. I have some sheep tendencies and some goat tendencies, and both need sorting out and proper directing as I am brought towards communion with God. Scott notes, and what's more, I think there's reason to believe that even the goats are not entirely without hope. After all, Jesus, who we are accustomed to thinking of as the Passover lamb, also takes the place of the first covenant's scapegoat in his incarnate life and death, so as to deliver us from the cycle of evil. If that's true, perhaps the life-giving and redeeming power of Christ's resurrection can extend even to those goat parts of me, of you, and of all things. No one, not even the goats, are entirely without hope. Now back to the subject of our job: to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, care for the sick, and visit people in prison. Preaching is an interesting art form, at least to me. You have a text firmly rooted in the historical context in which it was written, and also an expectation that it has something to say to you and your community in the present day. The texts don't change, but the application invariably does based on our context. Now, I could preach a sermon tonight about how there is so much more we should be doing, how our goat side is winning and we need to do better, do more, do different. And maybe next time I preach on this text, I will. But not today. This week, someone commented that the last few weeks of readings have been real downers, and they hoped we were getting a more hopeful passage this week. They didn't get their wish. They expressed a sense that what we needed right now, when the number of people who are sick and dying of this disease just continue to increase, was not a smarten up, work harder sermon, but a little hope, a little encouragement, a little reminder that sometimes we actually do get it right. Because while we have goat-like qualities as a community, while it's true that there is much to be done and we could be doing more, it's also true that as a community, we're doing some pretty wonderful things. And today feels like a day to spend some time focusing on those. In his rule, St. Benedict quotes Jesus' words and then instructs his followers that they are to welcome all as Christ. Basically, Christ is in everyone you meet. Treat them as such. Learn to see Christ in them. That is the basic hallmark of the Benedictine way of following Jesus. You all are doing this in so many different ways. People in this community volunteer for a wide range of organizations. Many of you work for nonprofits. You're checking in on neighbors, dropping off meals, writing notes of encouragement, praying for people. Those are such good things. Sometimes, maybe even oftentimes right now, you're recognizing that you also bear Christ's image, and you're giving yourself permission to not do all those things and rather to do the basics of taking care of yourself, because that's what you need right now: to eat regularly, to drink some water, and to rest. These are also good and important things to be doing right now. This community of all saints would not exist if we all didn't choose to pool some of our money into a collective pot we call the church budget. That money makes this common life possible. It makes it possible to rent space in this building, to have equipment and people to lead worship on this live stream, to host events, to create podcasts. All of this happens because we all give a portion of our individual incomes to make it happen. We could have just stopped there and said, "That's fine. That's enough. We're getting what we need. But 10 or so years ago, we were challenged to do more, and we rose to that challenge. Now, every year, we calculate 10% of our church's budget, and we set that aside. We set it aside for work done outside of our community. We set it aside for work we don't get to control. We set it aside to support groups that feed the hungry, clothe the naked, care for the sick, and visit people who are imprisoned. We could just choose to decrease the amount of money we all give to the church budget by 10% and not do that. We could choose to dramatically increase our budget and try to do all of that work in-house, where we can control it and ensure that it's done our way. But we don't. We give more so that collectively we can do more. And then we release control to other organizations precisely because we know that sort of control isn't effective, that they can do a better job with our money than we can. This year, we gave away over $20,000 to 14 organizations that are doing good work here in Winnipeg and around the world. And you can read more about them on the church's website. And it's not just money. After reading about these organizations in previous years, many of you have chosen to volunteer at them. And the Mission Fund is always looking for other ways that we can work more directly with the groups we support financially. Now, we can always also decide to give more so that we can both do more as a community and give more away. That's a great conversation to have when we look at next year's budget. But if you want a quick, simple, low-cost way to provide additional supports to these organizations, follow them on social media. Comment and share their posts. Learn more about what they're doing and cheer them on. Can you imagine the boost of encouragement on a Monday morning it would be if each one of these groups saw a bump of a few hundred followers and they had no idea why? I imagine that if Jesus was to appear right now and we were to ask the question from tonight's reading, Lord, when was it that we saw you in need and met that need? That Jesus might repeat his reply that, whenever you fed someone or clothed someone or visited someone, that someone was me. I think he would say, for these things, well done, good and faithful servants. Well done. And now for a but. It's a sermon. You knew there would be a but, right? Okay. But as I said earlier, context is key. We have done some things really well, and we can feel good about them. We are also in the middle of a healthcare crisis, and so in addition to well done, I also think Jesus would say, and when I was immunocompromised, you stayed home as much as possible, maintained a 2-meter distance, washed your hands, and wore your mask. And truly I tell you, just as you did this to the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. We're living through a difficult crisis. Be ever so gentle with yourself. It can be so easy to feel overwhelmed and helpless. Stay home. Wash your hands. Wear your mask when you need to go out. Keep 2 meters from others. We need to do this for each other. We need to do this for the people in our city who are sick. And we need to do this for our healthcare workers. Because right now they are doing their best, and their best is literally not good enough. There are simply more sick people than they could care for if they'd all just come back from a month's vacation in the tropics, let alone when they're exhausted and severely under-resourced. We are asking too much of them already. We all need to do our part. Stay home. Wash your hands. Wear your mask. Keep 2 meters apart. Check in with each other. Join us for prayer at 5 p.m. when you can. We are all in this together, even when we feel so far apart. Each and every person, including each and every one of you, has stamped within them the image of Christ. May we all, as both Jesus and Benedict have told us to do, learn to see Christ in each other and to treat each other accordingly. In the strong name of our triune God who creates, redeems, and sustains, amen.
This has been a sermon podcast from St. Benedict's Table. For information on our church, including further resources during these days of the COVID-19 global pandemic, or to provide support for our online work, visit us online at stbenedictstable.ca. Thanks for listening.